This is Michael Taylor of Western Carolina University interviewing Martha Ezard of Tiger Mountain Vineyards. Today is September 18th, 2011. And first of all, Martha, let me go ahead and just ask you, tell me how you first started Tiger Mountain Vineyards.
Well, my husband and I actually were in love with the land. I'm a lawyer, he's a doctor. Mm-hmm. We both grew up in Georgia, but he grew up milking cows on this farm. It is a five-generation-old farm. And when his parents became ill, his mom died, and his father was in poor health, it appeared that nobody in the family, he is one of five children, was going to keep the land together. So we came back here to kind of save a family farm and changed our lives rather dramatically to do it. And then we sort of looked at each other and didn't want to grow corn and beans. And John, I had taken a job. I was a journalist first on the editorial board of the Journal Constitution. So I was in Atlanta, but John was back and forth looking about his dad. And one day he stopped down in Habersham and talked to somebody about growing wine grapes. It was not Habersham Winery. There was another winery down there, and I can't remember the name of it. And he was advised to talk to a fellow in Virginia about the kinds of wine grapes that would grow well in the southeast. And he spent some time with him, and I thought he was nuts when he decided to plant wine grapes. I mean, I thought, we're going to start a vineyard in the Bible Belt. And I remember when my mother poured her wine in the flower pot when nobody was looking, a good Baptist woman. So I just, you know, thought it was crazy, but I thought, well, he'll get over this. And so he started planting, and he and one farmhand, after he'd studied with Dennis Horton in Virginia, started planting European varietals. Both of us knew that if we're going to grow grapes, we wanted to grow fine European-style grapes and make dry wine. Although we really didn't have any vision of making wine. We were just going to grow grapes. Mm-hmm. So we planted the kinds of grapes that would go with our soil and climate, terroir and wine talk. And so we planted, we didn't plant Chardonnay, we planted Viognier, we didn't plant Merlot, we planted Tannat, which people had never heard of around here, and I thought we'd be peddling grapes out of the back of the pickup, frankly. And so we planted Cabernet Franc and Malbec and Mourvèdre, and Cabernet Franc is a great East Coast grape. Everybody kind of knows that. And so we planted these unusual wine grapes, and it takes 3 years before you can actually harvest your first grape. So that was how it all started, and we did most of the work ourselves. We did not go out and invest millions. We didn't have millions to invest. I mean, we were both professional people, having sent three kids to college, and we had one farmhand and started doing most of the work ourselves, and so that's how it started.
Well, so at what point did it turn from just growing grapes at what point did y'all just say, hey, why don't we just turn it into a vineyard?
Well, there was a neighbor over here in Tiger who was very interested in making wine. He had been making apple wine in his at his vineyard. And he said to John, why don't the first harvest John sold to this mentor in Virginia, Dennis Horton. And so he said to John, why don't you keep a few of the grapes and let you and I make some wine? John thought that would be fun. And so they did keep some of the grapes and made a couple of barrels in Bill's basement. And we have a son-in-law who's quite a wine connoisseur, and he came and tasted it one time and said, dang, this is some of the best Cabernet Franc I've ever tasted. And he's a real studied wine connoisseur, and so we thought, well, maybe this, you know, is better than we know. Although I would say that it was 99, let's see, we planted in 95, so our first vintages were 99. And like this year, which is an incredible year for grapes, we had a big drought, because no matter that we're growing grapes in a humid climate, and we've chosen the kind that tolerate humidity, grapes basically love dry. Mm-hmm. So we happen to have had an incredible vintage our very first year, won a gold medal in the American Wine Society contest. And, oh, I should back up and say, After that, we decided to open a winery with these partners from Tiger. And, you know, we were making wine in a, what was the old creamery building on this farm that was a room air conditioner and an apple press, and it looked like medieval times. And then the wines turned out really good, and all of our friends liked them. And so we opened the, we began selling in 2001. And so that was how it all started.
Okay.
And we did invest some money up front. I mean, actually, we donated the buildings and the land for the party area and the parking and all that for the winery. But we had our own vineyard. The vineyard is Ezard Vineyard, and it still is. That was never part of the winery. So what happened eventually is that the winery pays us for our grapes, and they're separate entities, the vineyard and the winery.
Oh, okay.
So we jointly owned Tiger Mountain Vineyards and opened it and owned it with this couple in Tiger. We have since bought them out and have new partners, but they were good about helping us get started.
Oh, okay. What would you say was the biggest challenge when y'all were first starting it up?
Well, I think the biggest challenge, I mean, John knew a lot of chemistry. They called in some people, and they visited and talked to other winemakers, he and Bill. I think the biggest challenge was, and we've overcome it a bit, but still a challenge, was to convince people that you could have fine, dry wine, really fine wine, coming out of Georgia. Mm-hmm. People thought of Georgia with moonshine, with muscadine, sweet wines. And they didn't, you know, they could hardly believe that. We have today the only 100% Georgia-grown Malbec, M-A-L-B-E-C. Mm-hmm. You may know that grape. It's grown a lot in Argentina. And but we were determined we were going to grow everything here. We have one Native American grape, Norton. Biggest challenge was we'd go somewhere and, you know, people would say, oh, what kind of muscadine are you going? You know, it was just really hard to convince people, particularly when we started to sell commercially, mm-hmm. to convince wine shops and restaurants in Atlanta that there could be a really good Georgia wine.
Okay. My next question is, how have your experiences with this business influenced the way that you run your company?
Well, I would say the other challenge was getting people up here. You know,
right.
we wanted to sell. At first, we were selling just out the door. So we're, you know, Atlanta's our major market, and people do come from North Carolina, but it was a matter of, you know, getting the word out. We entered some contests, and we won some medals, and we got a splendid review in the San Francisco Chronicle by a sommelier, and we began to make marketing packets quoting all that, and he said, wines south of Virginia are generally forgettable, with one dramatic exception, Tiger Mountain Vineyards. So, now what was your next question? So that began to kickstart our publicity and our ability to get people to pay attention to us.
Okay. My next question is about how do you select people to join your company, or, like, what do you look for when you hire someone?
Well, we're very, very small. I mean, we operated for a long time with John and the former partner doing the winemaking and just a winery administrator and myself doing most of the marketing. Today we have two young men. One is a business manager and tasting room. He handles the tasting room also, and he's an assistant winemaker. So I guess you would say, and then the other one is the barrel room manager and the assistant winemaker. He knows a lot about wine because he's been with us longer, and he knows how to really help make the wine.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking for people who have a passion for making fine wine, and I think we're looking for people who want to live in this area. Not everybody does, you know, a small town. And we're looking for people who are versatile, because we're very small, and they have to have a myriad of skills. My assistant winemaker also does my website, for example.
Oh, okay. So my next question is, how do you orient them as a member of your team? I mean, how do you get them to buy into your business, or how do you bring them into the fold, I guess, is what my next question is.
Well, I don't know how to answer that, except that we operate kind of like a family, and we, you know, we have meals together now and then, and we, you know, taste and discuss things together, and then we use a lot of part-time people in our tasting room. I don't know that, I mean, looking back, I would be more careful, perhaps. I personally, as a lawyer,
okay,
would be more careful about being sure that the people we hired had the same vision of our company for the future that we have. I don't think that's been a giant problem for us, but I think it is very important.
Okay.
And certainly our partners did not have the same vision. So we bought them out, and we are happier campers.
Okay.
Doing that. But we have new partners who are lovely, and in fact, he was in high school with my husband.
Okay. My next question is, how do you motivate and reward those people that you have working for you?
Well, they get recognition on the website and at parties, and we give them bonuses. We all give bonuses at harvest. We try to give reasonable time off at holidays. One has a young family. We had a filmmaker here this week, and we made sure both of them, made double sure both of them were in it and talking about what they know. You know, that kind of thing.
Okay. You said it took 3 years. It takes 3 years before you can harvest the grapes off your vines. My next question is, how many years did it take for the business to first start earning a profit?
Oh, I don't know. We haven't put any of our own money into it since we opened, since 1999. But we are today even not taking hardly anything out. I mean, the winery pays us for our grapes, and so we come out pretty well on being able to cultivate the grapes and have the winery pay for it, and our revenues have increased every single year. But it's an enormous investment, barrels, pumps, you know, all kinds of equipment. A winery has great overhead, forklifts, you know, and so... after the first year, we did not put any more of our own money into it. The winery paid for a building. John, I'm talking to a young student at Western Carolina State who said, how long did it take us before we made a profit? But what would you say how long it took us? I mean, if we hadn't built, you know, three new buildings.
Yeah. Still expanding.
Yeah, I mean, what are those buildings worth? They're worth about $400,000.
Oh, okay.
They cost us that much. They may be worth more now. And the winery paid for that.
Oh, okay.
Over time. And, you know, so I would just say it's a business that has paid its own way. Built the buildings, you know. And bought equipment. And so we haven't had to pay for that. But it's a long-term deal with the winery. We're probably one of the few nearly debt-free.
Well, that's good.
But we're not taking great income out of it, no way.
Well, my next question is, what do you enjoy most about being an entrepreneur?
Oh, I think, you know, we enjoy being, I'll let John ask you that, answer that, he just walked in. I think what I enjoy most is being able to fashion it, having the independence to fashion it in a way that we think speaks to the public about what we're doing. For example, we really believe in farming and in local and in the land. And so our wines are a taste of the earth, not just any earth, but this earth right here at Tiger. And since it's been in John's family for five generations, that is particularly rewarding to be able to share that. And then the ambiance of our farm is fun to share with people. We enjoy taking them around and seeing how much joy they get out of tasting our wines and seeing our beautiful vineyards, because we remember when we were on our knees in the red mud, and it's not red mud, it's actually decayed granite here at the foot of Tiger Mountain. It's pretty good for growing grapes But we remember when it looked just, you know, barren with little sticks coming out of the ground. So it's been fun to watch all that develop. I think John and I both really like being outdoors, and we like the vineyard. And some people who make wine are really, you know, investors or, you know, are just interested in the making of the wine. I think if you get to know the grapes personally, you're a better winemaker. I am not a winemaker. I do most of the marketing.
Okay.
But is that the last question?
I have about six more.
Oh, okay. I was going to let John answer that one, but go ahead.
Okay. My next question is, what do you enjoy the least about being an entrepreneur?
Oh, I think the drudge of the paperwork, the taxes, the intricate regulations we have to put up with.
Okay.
The alcohol laws are horrible. Every time we cross the state line, it's why we don't sell more in North Carolina. We have to have a different distributor. I don't enjoy that, and I know John doesn't enjoy the paperwork and all of that. I enjoy scheduling tours and the people, but I think the paperwork and the regulation are a drag.
Okay. Well, my next question is, what were your proudest moments in terms of your business, and when did you both know that your business would be successful?
Well, I think when we won a couple of gold medals, when competing with wineries in California, when we had that article published that said, you know, our wines were showstoppers, and that was by a man who's a sommelier, a master wine, master sommelier, one of four in the world, and he published it in the San Francisco Chronicle, which, of course, is in the heart of Napa Valley. And so we that was the time we knew we could compete, and we were doing really fine wines. And then I think when we got into some top restaurants in Atlanta, some five stars, and we could say, wow, you know, this little old winery's in the Ritz-Carlton, our wine's in the Ritz-Carlton. I mean, that was the Ritz-Carlton dining room in Buckhead, and it's now closed in this economy. But anyway, for a few shining years, there are a couple of others in Atlanta that we feel proud about. But I think really the most rewarding thing is having our friends enjoy our wines, you know. And we've enjoyed learning more about food and wine and meeting a lot of interesting people who really care about perfecting the art of growing and making wine.
Okay.
So the circle of people we've met, which is a broad circle, you know, is very rewarding. We went to Burgundy this year, and we would probably never have enjoyed that trip as much if we weren't in the business.
Okay. Well, my next question is, has the recession had an impact on your business?
Yes, it has.
Okay.
It did not really so much until this year. And this year we noticed that we have more visitors than ever, but they are definitely buying less wine. In other words, instead of buying six bottles or a case, they're buying two bottles, you know, or four bottles maybe. So in the quantity that they buy from us out the door here at our winery, a tasting room, and we sell 75% to 80% out the door, although we do have a distributor now that distributes in all the major cities in Georgia, but they take such a big chunk, it doesn't do you much good. It's a small business.
Okay.
We have noticed that, and there has been so that has been evident, but we haven't suffered. And the first year of the recession, when everybody was saying, oh, woe is me, our revenues actually went up. And if you read the literature, you see that some things people don't give up. We felt like that first year, the people who live around, we're fortunate to be located near Lake Raven, Lake Burton, and Highlands. Mm-hmm. All are nice resort areas with people who have money to buy wine. And the first year, our revenues went up in the recession, which is that, would you say, 3 years ago. And we thought, and we decided that was because the people who have homes up there were coming and using those homes more in the spring, and, you know, instead of flying off to St. John's or somewhere, we're recreating closer to home. So we profited by that. But now people, I think, have been hit really hard. There are a lot of shop closings in Clayton, which is our nearest town.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that has impacted us somewhat. We're not hard. marvelous. In fact, we're expanding. We're now redoing our 75-year-old barn to serve lunch on weekends next spring.
Well, that's good.
And our daughter from California has come back here to help us, and so that's a great thing. She's sixth generation.
Well, good. It's nice to know it's going to stay in the family.
Yeah.
My next question is, what are your hopes for the future of Tiger Mountain Vineyards?
Well, I think we hope our wine keeps getting better and better, and we hope that we can pass it on to a new generation, and we hope that the building of this expansion of this barn, which will make us more of a destination. We aren't really opening a restaurant. We're going to have lunches catered, but we'll serve by the glass out there. We think that's going to bring in enough revenues, we hope, for our daughter and her husband to live here comfortably. I don't know that we could guarantee that right now.
Okay. My next question is, where do you see it in
One thing that has impacted us is that since the time John and I planted, there's now been a whole, just like in North Carolina, a whole birth of different wineries in this part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that has helped us because people begin to realize that there are other vineyards making and wineries making nice, fine wines and not all sweet wines and muscadine. And that knowledge, and we have a little wine association, people are begin to be aware that they don't have to go, you know, to California to get some nice wine, and that it's kind of fun to have a local wine.
Okay. My next question was, where do you see your industry in 5 to 10 years?
Oh, I think it's growing by leaps and bounds. It may be set back a little bit by this recession, but when John and I started planting in 93, and then we opened the, 95, and opened the winery in around 2000. We were the only fine wine vineyard up here. Now there are 9.
Goodness.
So that's not great. That's not enormous growth in business terms, but I think it's growing, and I think it will, continue to grow. So I would expect that both North Carolina and Georgia will eventually look something like the Virginia wine industry. And they have, 350, 600, I don't know how many wineries they have. But it's a real growth industry. We don't have the kind of political or state support they have in Virginia. We're still sending our chemistries off to Virginia Tech or Cornell. We don't have it. We're trying to get a viticulture chair at the University of Georgia. And I think you all have, I think North Carolina State, you're doing a little better than we are with some support for the industry, a little better than Georgia. But we hope that that's going to come.
Okay.
Because it is a big, there is more attention to agritourism, and I think that's going to grow too. People really want to be in a local area. And one of the things that has helped our business enormously, and we ride the trend as much as we can, is the local food movement, organic, local.
Mm-hmm.
I'm growing a couple of rows of our Native American grape organically. So local food, local wine go together, and I think that is also helping us a lot with some of the restaurants.
Okay. Well, my next question is, what do you think that local governments can do to bring economic prosperity back to their counties?
Well, support and encourage small businesses like ours. We don't get a whole heck of a lot of support from our local government, really. I shouldn't say that. I think our county commissioners have been really pretty supportive. But I don't think they're as aware as they should be of the agritourism movement.
Okay. Well, this is my last question. If you had any advice for potential entrepreneurs who, in your industry or in general, what would it be?
Well, I'm going to let John answer that since he's sitting right here. I've answered all this young man's questions. He's just asking you one question. Hey, this is Dr. Ezard, my husband.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Ezard. My last question I have for the interview is, if you had any advice for potential entrepreneurs, whether in your industry or in general, what would it be?
Be sure they love what they're going to be doing and be sure they know how much work it is ahead of time, and not be disappointed after, you know, putting a lot of money and effort into something and it not be what they really want.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank you both very much for taking your time during the harvest to talk to me.
You're quite welcome.
And if there's anything y'all ever need or that I can do, just let me know.
All righty.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Sure thing, sir. Bye.
Bye.